As the Money Burns is an original podcast by Nikki Woodard. Based on historical research, this is a deep exploration into what happened to a set of actual heirs and heiresses to some of America's most famous fortunes when the Great Depression hits. Each episode has three primary sections. Section 1 is a narrative story. Section 2 goes deeper into the historical facts. Section 3 focuses on contemporary, emotional, and personal connections. Story recap. Teen heiress Doris Duke has finally come out while Barbara Hutton awaits her turn. Despite the darker times, many activities are occurring on both sides of the pond, and travel is primarily via ocean. Now back to As the Money Burns. Smooth sailing. It's off to the races when an international yacht competition brings challengers from all over. This year's winner will be the first of his kind. Section 1, Story. Saturday, September 13th. A fog encroaches on the horizon. Hundreds have trickled into thousands gathering on land and sea into Newport, Rhode Island, all to watch today's exciting rare activity. Those with money mingling with those without. The perfect hunting ground for finding a rich husband. Plenty dressed in these stereotypical sailing-themed fashions. The best of the moment being ladies in bright Irish green beach pajamas. The flowy halter-topped wide-legged pantsuits make for striking female figures. The event, the America's Cup, a race established in 1851 between two nations competing for what is now the world's oldest, most coveted trophy, Old Mug. A slightly gaudy silver ewer cup standing little over 2 feet tall, engraved with the names of winners and challengers for nearly 8 decades worth of competition. On the periphery, a pleasure fleet of spectators hovers in anticipation. Amongst the civilians, tugboats, naval ships, Coast Guard cutters, and destroyers maintain order. Did you know Newport is a naval base? The USS Kane supervises all seafaring traffic. All are ready to marvel over the newest technology that will be in action today. It has been nearly a decade since an America's Cup has occurred, and this will be the first of the more streamlined J-class and in Newport. 12 miles out to sea, the 30 miles course will be straight line and back on odd races while alternating to a triangular pattern on even. The winner must win 4 out of 7 races. The long-running British challenger is Scott-Irish Sir Thomas Lipton. This will be his 5th attempt at the title and cup over 31 years. His ships, all being titled the Shamrock, have yet to bring the Scott his wish for luck. Plenty of sailors lore that lucky ships have 8-character names. Nearly 1 year earlier, in May 1929, Lipton threw down the gauntlet to offer a challenge from his Glasgow club. 4 New York syndicates accepted the challenge, and amidst several races, Harold Vanderbilt bested them all to become the lead American defender. His father, William Kissam Vanderbilt, Alva's philandering ex-husband, won in 1895, and first cousin Cornelius Vanderbilt III, a.k.a. Neely, won the race in 1903 against Lipton. The Scotch-Irish, aptly named Shamrock 5, is a fine ship indeed. Designed and built by Charles Nicholson in 1930, 77 feet in length at the waterline, plus qualifying at 23 meters. Its skipper, Edward Hurd, at the helm with a professional crew, while the Tea Baron and owner Lipton watches from his luxury yacht, Erin. The Shamrock 5 has fared well in prior races, prepping for this one. Harold Vanderbilt, known as Mike since Harvard, has built the state-of-the-art Marvel Enterprise. White metal streamline, no spared expense with new gadgets of innovative nautical design. A devoted marine student, well-versed and skilled in various courses and ships, Harold himself will skipper his relatively amateur crew. At Brenton's Reef, the USS Kane keeps a close eye over the race course. Its fleet of smaller ships patrol to prevent any interference from the non-competing hundreds of yachts and boats, all which must stay a half mile outside the course line. The 11:30 a.m. start has already been postponed for an hour due to the heavy fog and low breeze factor. The wind shifts from northeast to east when the officials finally determine the set course with the signal flag sent out. There are no radio transmissions. The Coast Guard clears the path of any stragglers, plenty of heirs and heiresses waiting on the various vessels. Aboard one of the luxury Vanderbilt yachts, Henry Van Allen gets comfortable while propping up his broken leg due to a recent polo accident. Proud young heir Jakey Astor fades into the background, seating over his brother Vincent's more prominent role as the current commodore of the New York Yacht Club, thus head race official. The emerald green Shamrock 5 and slim white Enterprise move into the light swell to await the signal, both prepping for the 15-mile run south by west and return, a straight windward and leeward course, essentially a direct point and back. 12:55 p.m., aboard Vincent Astor's yacht Nermahal, the gun goes off. The sails pop with the wind and lunge forward. Both Shamrock and Enterprise are a neck-and-neck start. This is going to be a good, tough race. Skipper Vanderbilt puts the Enterprise into the coveted weather berth, therefore snags the highly favorable wind current and getting a jump in the race early on. The two crews run furiously over their ships, managing the mainsail and jib sets, the Enterprise crew moving faster than the Challenger Shamrock. Then the Shamrock pulls out its spinnaker, the sail used for downwind. That helps the Challenger move faster enough to overhaul the Defender. Only the Enterprise isn't going to yield so easily and breaks out its own spinnaker, thus maintaining a good strong lead of 50 yards within the first half hour of the race. Spectators try to get a closer look as the fog obfuscates viewing. The Coast Guard works diligently to corral these Sunday drivers out of the way. The Shamrock pushes forward. However, its heavier canvas sails are no match for the Enterprise. The Enterprise's large, smooth sails compared to the Shamrock's wrinkled and rippled one. Yet by the end of the first race, the Enterprise wins by only 2 minutes, 42 seconds, and 1,000 yards. Traveling most of the race at 5 knots, the race would have normally been 5.5 hours in length. Ended up being Enterprise 4 hours, 3 minutes, and 4 seconds, and Shamrock 4 hours, 6 minutes, and 40 seconds. Close, so close, and yet, not at all. Several luncheons, dances, and other activities fill the festive air. Still wounded, teen heiress Doris Duke hobbles around while her ambitious mother, Nanaline Duke, scouts for potential husbands and hosts a luncheon. Both Harold and Lipton are confirmed bachelors. Monday, September 15th, arriving Monday morning, adventure-loving, baby-faced heir Huntington Harford has recently returned from European hiding with his mother, Henrietta, though he desperately begged to return in time for this big race before attending Harvard. They got delayed by 5 days. As she fusses about their Sea Verge estate, Huntington rushes out to catch what he can and find Jakey. Huntington dreams of a daring life at sea. Perfect weather for sailing and viewing. A good 10-knot breeze fills the air with hope and competition on today's triangular course. Yet once again from the start, Enterprise grabs a good strong wind and hurries out in front. It rounds the first turn at 1 hour 41 minutes and 30 seconds after the start. Shamrock rounded the marker at 1 p.m. 31 minutes and 35 seconds, already 9 minutes and 10 seconds behind the American ship. The Shamrock's only chance would be if the Enterprise broke down or its sail carried it off course. Not likely. The Enterprise hits the second turn at 1 hour 1 minute later from its first mark and crossing the bow of the Shamrock at 10:53. The Enterprise crosses the finish line at 2 p.m. 41 minutes and 31 seconds, completes the whole 30-mile triangular course in 4 hours and 31 seconds. Shamrock 5 crosses the finish line at 2 p.m. 51 minutes and 20 seconds. The second race, the Shamrock 5 loses by 10 minutes. Tuesday, September 16th, the race is postponed at 10:30 a.m. due to weather, more heavy fog, and lack of wind. Earlier, two spectator yachts collided in the hazy confusion. Lipton's crew gladly take the day to recuperate and adjust. Aboard his luxury yacht, Erin, Lipton laments to the reporter covering the competition, Cornelius Vanderbilt Jr., actually the fourth, goes by Neil, son of Grace Wilson and Neely Vanderbilt III, who himself won the 1903 race against Lipton. Over tea, Lipton remarks on the superior mechanical abilities of the Enterprise and Harold Vanderbilt's fine victories due to his skills and ability. Elsewhere, Jakey Astor and Huntington Harford plan to have their own syndicate one day and win the old mug themselves. Wednesday, September 17th, the third race. Thousands gather to watch. The day of rest gave much-needed reinvigorating. A good 12 to 15 knot breeze, a large heavy swell, and choppy waters add to the anticipation. This time, Shamrock takes the lead. Skipper Hurd pushes the yacht and crew to beat its technically superior rival. The Shamrock's nose smashes into the waves, fighting hard to keep its advantage and every sail full straining under the wind. Only 45 minutes into the race, 5 miles into the 15-mile leg, bow to bow, not more than 150 yards apart, the race is spectacular in the bright sun. Suddenly, a flash of misshapen white flaps around the emerald green Challenger. The Shamrock's main sail breaks from its block and comes crashing down on the crew, tangling them up. Enterprise finishes the course alone in 3 hours, 54 minutes, and 10 seconds. The damage done would only take a few hours to repair, and the Challenger assures that it will return tomorrow for another race. To win the America's Cup, Shamrock 5 will have to win the next 4 races. Thursday, September 18th, a triangular course of 10 miles each leg. Favorable breeze, clear skies, the crowd a little less enthusiastic since the outcome seems practically inevitable. The fourth race runs much like the others. The technically superior White Metal Enterprise beats the heavier Wooden Shamrock 5 by 5 minutes. At the fourth and final defeat, Sir Thomas Lipton utters, "I can't win." Section 2, History and Historiography. The America's Cup, or Old Mug, is a trophy awarded in sailing. It is the oldest international competition still operating in any sport. The America's Cup was founded in 1851 and named after the first winning schooner, America, which was run by several members of the New York Yacht Club, or NYCC. The America yacht was a sense of pride in defeating Britain's long, undisputed maritime power. The trophy was won during a race around the Isle of Wight in the United Kingdom. When Queen Victoria inquired about the second place winner in that inaugural 1851 race, her attendant replied, "Your Majesty, there is no second." The actual trophy Old Mug is the second oldest still used in competitive play after the Royal Musselburgh Golf Club trophy dating back to 1774 in Scotland. The America's Cup competition has been ongoing with periods of non-activity until another challenger emerges. Thus, periods of 2 to 19 year gaps might occur without a race. The average race occurs within 3 to 5 years. The most recent race in March 2021 was won by New Zealand. The America's Cup is important in advancing nautical technology. The ships are built specifically for the event and the requirements shift from year to year. This is definitely a rich man's sport. The original ships had to survive the ocean-bound trip to location on their own before the race. Other issues could occur, something like World War I being declared. Great Britain declared war on Germany on August 5, 1914. At the time, Sir Thomas Lipton was already on his way to Bermuda with both Shamrock IV and his luxury steamship, Erin, and Harold Vanderbilt's non-competing Vagrant ship had gone down to be a guide. Without a radio, Harold arrived to find the markers and buoys removed to prevent invasion and had to navigate the treacherous Barrier Reef and was threatened to be shot by naval ships. Eventually, Harold escorted Lipton's two ships out of Bermuda and back to New York, where Shamrock IV was ported until 1920 when it finally raced in that year's America's Cup against and losing to the American Resolute. On May 4, 1929, newspapers announced that Sir Thomas Lipton was making his fifth challenge for the America's Cup. The challenge requires at least a 10-month notice for the actual race. In 1929, even post the crash, four New York syndicates spent nearly $500,000 apiece to build their individual ships, competed against each other for the defender spot, while Britain only had one entry, Lipton Shamrock 5. About the four American ships, Whirlwind and Yankee were built in the Harrishoff Yard, while Enterprise and Widmo were built in Lawley and Sun Yards in Bristol. Whirlwind was the most innovative, the Yankee was the best all-rounder, and Widmo the nearest and strongest rival. Yet by the end of the trials, Enterprise emerged as a far superior contender. The Enterprise was fitted with a first dermalon mass and alloy of hardened aluminum. Significantly lighter, 4,000 pounds, 1,800 kilograms, and more maneuverable. As well, there were several technological devices also aiding the yacht. The Park Avenue boom being another modification that allowed quicker and easier adjustment to the sails. Alas, the Shamrock 5 was a wooden boat with a wooden mast. For the 1930 race, the J-class yacht was the state-of-the-art requirement. The J-shape referring to the ship's waterline needed to be between 75 to 87 feet in length. The newly designed Bermuda mast was also important as it allowed yachts to carry a huge sail plan. On the outside, Shamrock 5 and Enterprise seemed well-matched in size. Internally, they were light years apart. The wooden, older nautical design and engineering versus the lightweight metal and maneuverability of modern technology. As well, Shamrock was underwinched, those metal circular devices used to manage the lines guiding the sails, while Enterprise was loaded with them. Under smooth conditions, they were near equals, only the Newport conditions were not smooth and stable like those on the other side of the Atlantic race competitions. Shamrock's professional crew were unprepared for the complications facing them. In the end, each had spent millions to compete over what is essentially a $43 trophy. Without a doubt, the Americans had outspent and outgadgeted their ships, and the results were undeniable. The British crew, a little disappointed, but kept stiff upper lips instead of complaining about how this lacked sportsmanship. Somewhat antiquated in thinking, as better designs were inevitable. Lipton, in his interview with Neil Vanderbilt, marveled over American innovation, remarking that the Brits remained more behind in such mechanical and technological advancements, to their detriment. Also, no one could deny the superiority of Harold Vanderbilt's skill and competitive spirit. Generally mild-mannered and soft-spoken with his crew and others, Still, one Brit intimated that Harold Vanderbilt, to be the most ruthless of skippers, he would dive into a challenge full throttle when others would back down. Harold's signature of the moving start perfected the art of crossing the starting line right on the dot. This gave him a huge lead advantage compared to his rivals. Innovative and daring, Harold spent years studying and training to sail under all conditions, especially those in Newport. As the youngest son of Gilded Age Society Queen Alva Vanderbilt, Harold spent many days at his parental cottages, Marble House and Belcourt, as well as other family estates, Beaulieu and the Breakers. A student at the elite St. George's Boarding School, then college at Harvard. Harold's interests always leaned towards the sea. He wasn't a mere dabbler, but very astute in learning every mechanism and maneuver needed in sailing. Upon coming into his $30 million fortune, he would quickly build and update racing ships. He served as a lieutenant in the U.S. Naval Reserve during World War I. Harold would be one of the last Vanderbilts to serve in high office in the New York Central Railroad, which was the center of the dynastic fortune. Unlike the Vanderbilt heir, Lipton built his own independent fortune. Born in 1848 in Glasgow, Lipton's parents had fled the Irish potato famine, resettling in Scotland. In 1864, young Thomas signed up as a cabin boy, saved his money, then went to the U.S. for 5 years, learning all about American agricultural and industry. Returning to Scotland, he expanded the family grocery store, setting up the Lipton Market, and by 1880s invested in the Omaha, Nebraska stockyards and selling them in 1887. By 1890, he traveled to British Ceylon, the area now known as Sri Lanka, and purchased Ceylon tea, eventually becoming Lipton tea. He would use his fortune and properties to help those in need, donating his yachts to the Red Cross during World War I and aiding Serbia during the 1915 typhus epidemic. He was a Freemason and made Knight Commander of the British Order in 1901, and in 1902, a baronet. He was very genial in nature and often put people at ease, unlike other industrial tycoons. Sir Thomas Lipton was a lifetime sports aficionado, sponsoring multiple tournaments and trophies. His mates included the Prince of Wales and Kings Edward II and George V of Great Britain. Lipton had a lifetime dream to win the America's Cup and submitted 5 separate challenges from 1899 to 1930. Even after his 5th defeat, he contemplated one more try, but never did. At age 83, Lipton passed away on October 2, 1931. The Shamrock 5 would be bought by future challenger Sir Thomas Sopwith in 1931, who would go on twice to challenge for the America's Cup against Harold Vanderbilt, no less. Both Lipton and Harold shared one other prominent and somewhat noteworthy status as bachelors in 1930. Harold would marry Gertrude Conaway in 1933 and never had children. Touted at times to be the most eligible bachelor in the world, Lipton remained a lifelong bachelor, claiming he never could find a woman as good as his mom. The truth? Despite a few dalliances for appearances, Lipton was a closeted homosexual as etiquette demanded at the time. He had a 30-year relationship with his shop assistant, William Love, among others afterwards. As for Harold Vanderbilt, he was also a champion bridge player, even developing a more popular contract bridge system. In 1947, Harold was given an honorary CBE, Commander of the Order of the British Empire, by King George VI, Queen Elizabeth II's father. The sailing drink Sterling Punch is named after him. It is made of grain alcohol, Mount Gay rum, and a dash of whiskey. Versions will include fruit juices or water to balance the alcohol. It is popular among yachting club bars and parties. He was featured on the cover of Time magazine's September 15, 1930 issue and has his own trading card for Kings of Speed. Both men were clearly role models for future male heirs and the possibilities of a large fortune. Section 3, Contemporary and Personal Relevance. After World War II, it was harder and harder to build the large, expensive ships to race. In 1956, almost 20 years since the last challenge, guidelines were created to make a smaller class of 12-meter boats to make it more feasible to operate. The races continue to this day. Another Newport colonist, Larry Ellison's Oracle team, won in 2010 and 2013, then lost in 2017 to New Zealand. The most recent America's Cup was in March 2021, with New Zealand winning against the challenger from Italy. Today, the Old Mug has twice been added upon to continue the ever-growing list of competitions. It now stands at 1.1 meter high and weighs 14 kilograms. Two additional silver bases in 1958 and 1992, along with a strong carbon fiber base to match the Oracle, wins. It is heavily guarded by Brinks in the United States and is kept in an undisclosed location when not on display. It travels in its own specialty Louis Vuitton case. Sir Thomas Lipton became known worldwide as a lovable, gamist, and world's best loser in the perpetual tags and news accounts on him. He was the epitome of good sportsmanship. Make no mistake, he was an excellent competitor and gave good chase for the winner. Only the results never yielded his larger goal of winning the prized America's Cup. After so many losses, the Americas wanted him to finally win after 14 attempts to lift that old mug trophy. American articles and cartoons show admiration rather than mockery. Meanwhile, his British compatriots wanted this to be his final loss in hopes that the next challenger would finally be someone new. It should be noted that of all those ships built long ago to race, it is only the Shamrock 5 that is still active in use today. No small feat and a testament to its design and engineering, though not state-of-the-art enough to win the cherished race. Smooth sailing never made for skilled sailors, and our heirs and heiresses have some rough seas ahead. Will they navigate them successfully? Next, when we return to As the Money Burns, as a widow prepares for the anniversary of her husband's death, the daughter still remains in the way of the fortune. The web of secrets is starting to unravel. Until then. As the Money Burns is an original podcast written, produced, and voiced by Nikki Woodard based on historical research. Archival music has been provided by Past Perfect Vintage Music. Check out their website at www.pastperfect.com. Please come visit us at As the Money Burns via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Transcripts, timeline, episode guide, and character bios are available at asthemoneyburns.com.